It's done.
Connor McDavid! It's not real!
The goal of the year?
Panarin!
Part of the past. The celebrations? Forgotten. The history?
Vegas Golden Knights!
History. We're back to a blank slate. Clean ice. All that matters now is what happens next. The Stanley Cup Playoffs.
Eastern Conference Final begins Wednesday.
Alrighty, welcome to the South to South podcast brought to you by Prize Picks, the exclusive fantasy basketball partner of the CLNS Media Network. And if you enjoyed this podcast, check out the How About Them Celtics podcast, the First to the Floor podcast, and the many other New England sports podcasts available on the CLNS Media Network. I'm Cameron Tiptoe. I am your host. I'm joined by Alex Goldberg, Dr. Justin Quinn. And we are recording just after a 102-88 Boston Celtics victory over the Miami Heat in the opening round of the NBA postseason. Boston now holds a 3-1 series lead. And we will talk about that. We will also talk about an apparent injury to Kristaps Porzingis, but I'm choosing to walk on the sunny side of the street because I get to because I'm the host. So
we still can walk, unlike Kristaps Porzingis.
Okay. Now that you did that, let's bring people up to speed with where we're at because listeners are in the future. So last we heard, they don't think it's an Achilles injury, and thanks to our friend Josue Pavone, we saw images of Porzingis walking around in a walking boot. So we'll talk more about that later. Anyways, the good stuff was probably Derek White is the headline there, but I'll let you guys decide. Alex, what's up in Brooklyn, and what was your big positive takeaway from Game 4?
Not too much going on in Brooklyn. Just, you know, hanging out. It's finally warm here, so I think going to be adjusting our lives around what will hopefully be a nice run of summer weather. But in terms of the Miami Heat and the Boston Celtics, speaking of Heat, I think the positive takeaway of this game is, at least to me, that this Miami team has no business being in the playoffs. And I think the Celtics showed that pretty convincingly, regardless of who was out there. I mean, the main takeaway is that, you know, Derek White can emerge and be a kind of third star borderline level player as needed. That's the headline for sure. And, you know, I think the Celtics defense was also pretty terrific throughout this game. Those are the big
problems. Not early, but we can talk about that in a second.
Yeah.
All right. Well,
what's your good stuff? We'll do the bad stuff after.
The good stuff is the Celtics played like ass on defense to start the game and immediately found that the Heat were not hitting literally every goddamn shot. So this time it did not burn them very badly. But the positive aspect of that is they figured out what they were doing wrong really quickly, fixed it. And for the most part, that was really the last time we had any problems with defense.
Yeah, I would specifically shout out Drew Holiday and Al Horford, who had like stereotypically great individual defensive performances. I'll take the bait. The headline was Derek White is the biggest positive. 38 points, career high for Derek White in the postseason. And I think outright, I may have that wrong.
No, it is, yeah.
Definitely, okay. Definitely his career high from a postseason game. I actually don't even think his previous ones were particularly close.
His previous one was 36.
Oh, didn't realize. Well, Derek White, you didn't realize you were built like that.
Well, he did with the Spurs, so yeah, he's been at it for a while. He had 8 3-pointers, which ties the Celtics postseason regulation record. And fans of a certain age will remember Ray Allen's 50-point, 9 3-point performance in a triple overtime game against the Bulls in 2009. So that was fun to look up and reminisce about. Anyways, yeah, Derek White hit a bunch of threes, which was cool. But it's also a reminder of how deep the Celtics team is. It's kind of a broken thought experiment. If you put Derek White on a different team, would he be the second best player? But like, I don't know. 38 yeah. In a postseason. Like how many guys, I think the list of guys who've scored 40 in the postseason for the Celtics is like maybe a dozen. And they've been playing Celtics basketball since the 40s. So he was really knocking on the door of like super rarefied air.
I mean, in the end of his Spurs run before he got hurt, Derek White was primed for some potentially really big stuff. He looked really, really good towards, like, he had that one playoff run that I remember pretty distinctly, probably the one that you were just referencing, where there were games where Derek White looked like the best player on the court, and the Spurs were completely overmatched, and he got injured, but he looked really good. I think there's definitely, like, you know, it's we've beaten this into the ground since he was traded to Boston, but, like, what a home run by Brad Stevens to get that guy for the amount, for the value that he did. I mean, holy crap.
I mean, there's that, but there's also, like, at the beginning of this year, we were plausibly saying, is Derek White going to be an all-star? And he kind of slowed down a little bit there in January and February, but if they're going to get November, December Derek White for this postseason run, or even parts of this postseason run, that's...
here for it.
They're adding an all-star caliber player. I mean, we weren't over our skis in suggesting that he's an all-star. So happy for Derek White because he's a good dude, but also just tremendously important for the Celtics moving forward. And yeah, Alex, the point that you raised is an important one. Like, I don't think we know much of anything. That Heat team played like dog doo-doo. Yeah. Bam Adebayo was great. 25 points, 17 rebounds, 5 assists.
Define great.
And a couple of dirty plays to go with it.
Thank you.
I'm not as scandalized by that. He was the only Heat player trying and successful at that. So
trying at what?
Yeah, trying is one thing. Posing out under shooters at a dead ball plays entirely.
Shoving people to the ground. Yeah, that's not basketball, man.
Again, I rooted for Kevin Garnett too hard and too visibly and vocally to say much. He shouldn't do it, but it's not like he didn't invent the shit. Like, lots of guys are doing it. I like the closing on Jason Tatum. He didn't mean to do that. It was a silly thing to do, but it wasn't.
Just don't do it.
Yeah, he shouldn't have done it, but it wasn't dirty. Like, I don't think he meant to injure his very good friend.
I'm sure he didn't mean to injure him, but it's just like, don't do that. Like, don't. Why would you bother doing that? Also, while we're here, this is the only amount of time I'm going to spend on this for this podcast, but Stan Van Gundy, come on, man, have some shame.
Oh, I didn't listen to that. I was listening to the local podcast.
It was absolutely deranged. Stan Van Gundy, my Lord, dude. Jason Tatum did not deserve to land on Bam Adebayo's
Wait, isn't it Jeff Van Gundy?
No, this was Stan. Stan Van Gundy, yeah, Jason Tatum did not deserve...
Oh, Jeff Van Gundy works for the Celtics. Sorry, yes, I was being dumb.
Jason Tatum did not deserve to land on Bam Adebayo's foot and possibly hurt himself because the Celtics didn't give the requisite effort while they were up 20. Unbelievable. Like, this... There is bad commentary in basketball games. I think we all know that at this point.
He's usually pretty good. That's very out of character for him.
This was a particularly bad night for Big Stan, and definitely one that made me question his abilities going forward.
I was listening to the local broadcast. I will say it was an awful game. Like, it wasn't a good game. Like, Derek White had a good game. There were times where the Celtics strung together some good looks. And when they wanted to, they scored with, like, unbelievable ease. And then they took their foot off the gas. And so a lot of, like, the data that you could pull from this game is noisy and messy. So I'm glad I didn't have to talk about it for 48 minutes because it was a pretty boring game. I will say, so I didn't hear the Van Gundy thing. I don't think anyone deserves to get hurt. That seems like that's poor form.
That's ridiculous.
While we're airing out grievances, the NBA's review process is so bad. It's a television product. Make it snappy. Like, no one cares about the integrity of the call. Or if they do, the second that there is a review, like they do in the NFL, have someone review every whistle, every play, so that by the time the ref even, like, looks up to consider reviewing it, someone with, like, a referee credential has already done so. Like, why do they put a time limit on it?
Yeah, 2 minutes max. Absolute max. There's challenges that literally go for 4 or 5 entire commercial breaks length, and they're still doing them when you come back from the commercial break. That doesn't need to happen. If you can't do it in 2 minutes, and I'm a person who actually does like review, I don't want to see it.
All right, let's pause the action and talk about our friends over at Prize Picks, America's number one fantasy sports app. It's the easiest and most exciting way to get in on the action while you watch your favorite sports and players, because Prize Picks has something for every sports fan, from basketball and hockey to League of Legends and everything in between. Prize Picks even has injury insurance, so your entries stay in play even if one of your players gets injured. It's been one of my favorite parts of using Prize Picks, and my favorite way to feel safe when I get in on the action and ensure that everything that I'm mulling over for that night's slate of games is ShipShape. So download the app today and use code CLNS for a first deposit match up to $100. Pick more, pick less. It's that easy. Download the app today and use the code CLNS for a first deposit match up to $100.
But then also they do this stupid thing where like then the ref has to talk in what can only be described as a microphone from the 1980s to a really loud room of people. And you can never hear what they have to say. It's so stupid. Like, write it down or something. Like, hold it up Survivor style. I don't understand. Anyways, it's good. The Celtics won. They played an inferior opponent. And they're going to close out the series. Teams that are up 3-1 in the series coming into tonight have won 95% of the series. It's only been 13 times that a team's come back from down 1-3. So I think Boston's probably fine. Which is to say that we can, I think, turn our attention to the Porzingis injury, because technically it's not doom and gloom, but the good stuff is pretty obvious. Well, no, I just mean like for the game writ large. A better version of me would have looked up Boston's record with Kristaps out of the lineup. He missed 25 games this season. I'm pretty sure they were like 22-3.
They were very good.
So can I keep going? I have a few things to say.
Sure. Do it.
Yeah.
This is not reporting. This is a thought that I'm having, especially as someone who has a chronic calf injury. I was talking to my physical therapist about Giannis's injury last week or 2 weeks ago. And he was saying, yeah, when your soleus, which is the group of muscles that connects to the top of the Achilles, when that's strained or weak or tight, it pulls the Achilles and it can feel like it's really acute. And when I've dealt with that injury, like, there are times where I like hobble around. Alex, I don't remember if I had that injury when you were playing hoops with us, but I was like running around like late Dirk Nowitzki, like barely moving my feet off the ground. Mm-hmm. So this is not reporting, but I suspect he's dealing with something like noted athletes, me and Giannis, are dealing with, which is a calf injury that can present itself in shooting Achilles pain that, left untreated, could result in Achilles tear or injury of some description. But I want to be clear, A, no one yet has said Kristaps has an Achilles injury, and B, I'm speculating. I have no inside reporting. It's me and my physical therapist. Shout out to Wellness in Motion in Brookline. Okay, so that's my take on the injury. Justin, what about you?
It's concerning. You know, there has been no reporting. We have heard that from Adrian Wojnarowski, they do not believe, but this, again, this is still not tested with an MRI, which is going to be the final word, what the nature of the injury is. So we could be looking at anything from a game to several months. We have no idea what the nature of this injury is. But for me, mercifully, the best thing we have going on here is an Eastern Conference runaway where all of the matchups should be winnable no matter how long it takes to get to the finals. So with that said, let's hope it's way earlier than that.
Can I, Alex, before you go, I'm just going to give a real timestamp live. Porzingis just tweeted,
yeah,
good W tonight. D White is special. Thanks for all the support. We'll be good. Strong emoji. Okay, Alex, yeah, go.
Just saw that. And that's hopefully a sign that things are headed in the right direction for Kristaps Porzingis. I think it's pretty clear at this point, at least from where I'm sitting, I would be very surprised if we see Kristaps for the rest of this series. And I would be pretty surprised if we see him in the next round as well, given just how cautious Boston has been with his injury. Feel like, you know, they have at this point, to your earlier point, Cam, they've played a significant percentage of this season now with Al Horford in the starting lineup without Kristaps Porzingis, and they've had some success in those situations. It's not like they lack experience in that. So they will be very cautious with whatever Kristaps' injury is. I mean, listen, the reality is we're not going to know until the MRI comes back, which is going to happen tomorrow. You know, from what I have seen, if it's a grade one, if we're assuming it's a calf strain, which I think is not unreasonable at this point. If it's a grade one calf strain, we're probably looking at a timeline of 1 to 2 weeks. If it's grade two or higher, that could potentially be, you know, we're talking out until the finals or something of that nature. Typical timeline on that is 3 to 6. That's what Giannis has right now, for context. And we haven't seen him all this series against the Pacers. I doubt we will see him. And, you know, Giannis Antetokounmpo is the most important player on a Bucks franchise that very desperately needs to win right now. If he's not playing, you know that, like that, that's not a guy who will like take games off, you know, just because, like, if he's not playing, he can't physically be out there. And so if Kristaps has a grade two calf strain, the Celtics need to be prepared to play without him basically until the NBA finals, or pretty darn close to it, which would be hard. I mean, like, that's, you know, he's been a huge part of their success this year. When he's on the court, Boston has been a juggernaut. And when he's not on the court, you know, they've been very good. But I think pretty much everybody who pays any attention to this team understands that there's a level they can hit with Kristaps on the court that they just can't with, you know, because when you're starting Al Horford, that's great. Al Horford is still a starting caliber NBA player. But now you've got extended Luke Kornet minutes. You've got extended Xavier Tillman minutes, et cetera.
So before you continue, I want to hear how each of you think that Joe Mazzulla should be handling these minutes, because I'm worried he's going to lean into Al Horford, and we need him later on in the series. This is not a series where he's very important, in my opinion. He's important, don't get me wrong, but he's more important in future matchups.
Well, I think, Justin, the answer to your question really depends on who the Celtics are playing, because the Pacers present like a fundamentally different challenge than the Magic, and Boston would face either of those two teams in the next series. And just,
well, no, they would face Cleveland or Orlando.
Oh, Cleveland, sorry. Cleveland. That even more so, I feel that. And Alex, to your point, the conference finals would start about 3 weeks from today. So a conference finals return, depending on the nature of the injury, could be tough. But Justin, I'm going to answer your question as soon as I pause the action and talk to you about our friends over at GameTime.co. The NBA playoffs are heating up. Wouldn't it be great to be there live? The energy, the buzzer beaters, the chance to see the best players in the world battle it out. Well, getting tickets doesn't have to be a hassle, especially if you use the GameTime app like I do. GameTime.co is the best way to see your favorite sports live. And here's the best part. Prices on GameTime can actually go down the closer you get to tip-off. With flash deals, zone deals, and other sports, GameTime is the best way to get tickets to any game. And it's not just the NBA. I use GameTime whenever I want to go to Fenway and catch the Red Sox, or if I'm heading into town for a concert. No more wondering what I'm actually paying for, and guess what? Game Time guarantees the lowest price. If you find a cheaper ticket, they'll credit you 110% of the difference. So ditch the ticket stress and download the Game Time app today. Use the code CLNS for $20 off your first purchase. That's CLNS for $20 off. Download Game Time. Last minute deals, lowest price guaranteed. Game Time. Alrighty, Alex, you want to do what happens if they play the Magic, and I'll do what happens if they play the Cavs?
Sure.
And Justin, you're the ref.
Sounds good. Right. So if the Boston Celtics, they're going to close out Miami. If they don't close out Miami, I'm going to walk into oncoming traffic. So they're going to close out Miami, and it's going to be fine. And in the next round, they're going to face a feisty, up-and-coming, you know, young, long, athletic Orlando Magic team that just cannot shoot the basketball at all. But holy smokes, is their defense for real. And a team that has frankly given Boston some challenges here and there in these past couple of years. Like I said, you know, they're long, they're athletic, they're physical, they're well coached. Jamal Mosley, I think, has done a really good job with that team. So if Boston is going to play Orlando, there's a couple of things that they're going to need to be looking for. The first is this. Boston has to make their shooters earn it. And by that, I mean, this is a great series for Drew Holiday to start mucking things around, playing off ball, playing in zone coverages, disrupting passing lanes. The Magic don't have a player who can be a high-level individual primary creator. They do it by committee, and sometimes Wagner will get hot, and sometimes Paolo will get hot, and you know that's been their play up to this point. So that leaves a lot of room for the Celtics' help defenders to be extremely active, to play the zones, to play the passing lanes, and to make life difficult for Orlando on the offensive end. So I think starting off, you have to make their shooters earn it. And by that, I don't mean leave them wide open, because leaving people wide open, even on bad shooting teams, is never a good idea in the NBA playoffs. But, you know, force them to actually, like, have to shoot the ball. It really means protect the paint more so than anything. To that end, you can expect to see, particularly if Porzingis is out, There's going to be some Luke Kornet going on in this series. There's going to be some Xavier Tillman going on in this series. The emphasis will be on packing the paint and on controlling the glass. That is going to be huge because the Magic absolutely feast off of offensive rebounds and off of transition attacking points. So the key to beating Orlando is Boston needs to own the glass from the jump. They need to make them earn it on the defensive end and then on the offensive end. And then for Boston's offense, Orlando is super physical. It's super long. It's super athletic. They absolutely love when guys take a lot of dribbles and play isolation basketball and there's not a lot of cutting and there's not a lot of movement, because that gives all of their long athletic wings a chance to set up shop and block shots and be in the way. So the number one thing on offense that Boston desperately, desperately, desperately needs to do if they're going up against Orlando is lean into Mazzulla ball, pass the rock, move quickly, get into your options quickly. Don't give them a chance to get into a set defense. Really push that pace, kick the ball around, and get the ball out to shooters. Like, I think playing, this is where you run into a tricky challenge, because on the one hand, you want to play perhaps a guy like a Kornet or a Tillman just for defensive purposes and for particularly controlling the glass, as I mentioned earlier. But the appeal of playing a five-out lineup against this Magic team, particularly given how good they are defensively and the extra ball movement and passing that you're going to need to really break them down, that's going to be an interesting wrinkle and an interesting chess mess. So that's what I'm looking for in that series.
Okay.
I think a couple things about the Cavs and respect to the Cavs. I can't see a world where they could do it. So I think the Celtics can save Al Horford pretty good here, which I would hope that they would. And there's a couple people for whom that becomes really important. First of all, I think Xavier Tillman, again, I'm curious that we haven't seen, I think, a single minute of him this series. He's not Al Horford. I'm not getting it twisted here, but not just because they look alike on television.
His style of play is about as close as you're going to get on the Celtics roster, apart from the man himself.
Or I feel like we spent stretches this season saying, wow, Jason Tatum playing free safety on defense is really fascinating. Let's see some more of that. And, Mobley and Jared Allen are big. I'm talking about the Cavs now. But I don't think that they can command the Cleveland offense in the same way. So I think I don't know. I would just like to see Jason do what Al does. And this would be a good lab, no pun intended, for him to check that out. I also think, with respect to Darius Garland, who broke every part of his face several different times this season, and Spider Mitchell also had a bunch of injuries, just get chesty with them on the perimeter, such that you don't need Al Horford to do it all. I'm still, Justin, I'm glad you asked the question, because I'm really weary of Al Horford playing a ton of minutes in the front part of the postseason, and obviously the
Kornet. Same. He's most valuable in the more advanced rounds, in my opinion, as well.
He played 34 tonight. I believe that's 10 more than he's been playing all series. They kind of needed all 34 minutes of it. So I don't think it ought to be too big of a challenge next series to keep Al's minutes down, but I sincerely hope it's an imperative. Easier said than done. Joe Mazzulla coming to Al and saying, hey, remember how you couldn't hit threes last year because you were so tired? You don't get to play that much this series. I don't think that conversation goes over super well.
Not for him like that, it doesn't, though.
No, I don't think so, but it is...
But you're not wrong.
And it's probably one of the chief concerns with the Porzingis injury, because Alex, to your point, or someone said it, the Cavs and the Magic are not beating the Celtics.
The concern is injuries along the way, not whether you win or lose, in my opinion.
Certainly. And then, we'll podcast a couple times between now and then. But when they presumably face the Knicks in the conference finals, that's going to be fascinating, too. Speaking of which, we'll talk a little bit more here, but like and subscribe to our podcast, because we, again, have an irregular schedule. And we don't want you to miss an episode. So by telling your favorite app, hey, I like this podcast, you'll be dialed in, because, again, we're not doing our usually weekly episode. We're doing it when it's relevant. Also, shout out to Bryce, my colleague from work. He always asks me about the podcast. Hey, Bryce. Okay. So let's do this. Alex is, we're all right. Miami, good luck, Miami, on your offseason endeavors. Actually, on the Celtics Lab podcast.
Bad luck.
Terrible luck. I don't want to see them in the playoffs again for several seasons. Well, that's the kind of luck I hope they have.
Okay, well, shelve your emotion for a second and put on your empiricist hat. Scale of 10 being 100% or no percent, what likelihood is it that Miami is like a bona fide player in the postseason next year?
Well,
like assuming full health.
Donovan Mitchell is going to be on the Miami Heat next year, so they're going to be in the postseason. Spicy. Yeah,
somebody like that, if not him. I don't know if it's going to be a good decision. It could be Bradley Beal.
That would be dark.
Yeah, no, I know, but like they're going to try to make a move. I don't think they're really going to make a move that bad, but I mean, speaking of the Suns, there's going to be some teams that made mistakes this year. And they're going to grab someone from one of those mistakes. And the question is, will they continue to be a mistake?
I would be fully I'm fairly confident that as long as Miami has Spo and Jimmy and Bam as the architecture to build around, they're going to be part of the conversation every year that they are healthy. I think they have some chips to play in the offseason. They're actually, given how over leveraged a lot of other Eastern Conference teams are, they're in a pretty good position to grab at least one other difference maker. I fully expect them to be back next year.
I mean, I will say that I agree with that, but Jimmy is 34 going on 35.
Well, he also did say healthy, to be fair.
But being 34 is different. He's not going to be Jimmy, but like, we probably have seen peak Jimmy Butler.
That's right. But I think if they get somebody who can basically, you know, carry the regular season load for Jimmy, which I think is a possibility, then they're going to be fine.
Well, Justin, since you said the secret word Suns, I got three things to say, but I'll do it quickly. First of all, it occurs to me that as much of a disaster as it would be for the Celtics to come up short this season, unless they like lose to the Heat here, they're not going to have the biggest disaster of a season in the NBA. The Suns, the Lakers, like there are other teams that are going to end up looking more pathetic, even if the Celtics come up disastrously short. Second, to that end, I pitched this on Twitter and I'm just pitching it again because I like the sound of it so much. I want LeBron, Kevin Durant, and Steph Curry to team up together. I believe the smoke that LeBron may have played his last game for the Lakers. I believe the possibility that the Suns are so in a corner that they have to trade Durant, and Steph Curry deserves whatever Steph Curry wants, except for, you know, housing diversity, apparently.
Like that sick burn. Thank you, sir.
I mean, it's gross, Steph. Come on. Anyways, a couple of people, including Big Waz over at The Ringer, said, hey, the smoke about Devin Booker going to New York is worth considering, and check me out. Devin Booker would be an icon in Miami and would be a really fun team. I know you guys hate the Heat, but I think
but they can't afford Booker.
I also don't think,
what if he puts his thumb on the scale?
I just don't think the Suns are gonna trade Devin Booker is what it comes down to. I think they think of him as their franchise player.
But he might not. This is the NBA.
Maybe, but it's possible for sure. But I don't know. I think they would be much quicker to try and move Kevin Durant. Than they would Devin Booker.
Oh, no, I don't disagree with that. But I also think it's possible they could move both if the star players come to them and say, hey, guess who Devin Booker could ask for tips? Kevin Durant. He forces his way off teams all the time, right? So if I'm just saying, there was a lot of conversation today about seemingly reasoned takes that Booker could bolt, and goodness gracious, the number of people trying to score points within the Suns organization by way of leaks today, it doesn't look good. So anyways, good luck to the Suns. Celtics party keeps rolling. Quickly, game 5 is Wednesday in Boston. other than a win, anything you're particularly looking for? I think I have an answer, but
I have an answer. End the first. This series, end it quick, do it mercilessly.
Yeah, that's the main takeaway. I am going to be interested to see, because I do think Porzingis is not going to play in this next game. I would be absolutely stunned if he is able to go. And frankly, I would be like a little worried about what's going on with the Celtics training staff if they even allow him on the court. So I will be interested to see how much Luke Kornet, how much Xavier Tillman, how much will the kind of additional rotation guys be taxed in here. Because I think the kind of cascading effect of the Porzingis injury is not just that you're going to see more minutes for Tillman, Kornet, et cetera. It's that you're also probably going to see a shift in how the Celtics play with their bench guys. You might see them leaning into a small ball lineup more, or maybe going the opposite way, playing like double big sets to try and make up for the lack of rim protection. I will be very interested to see the kind of tactical and rotation adjustments that Joe Mazzulla makes in what will almost certainly be a game that they won't have Kristaps Porzingis and will still feel, I think, tremendous pressure to close the series out in.
Yeah, just on that quickly, the lineup of Pritchard, Holiday, Hauser, Tatum, Horford has gotten some good play, and I really like that group. I think I said that the other day.
Yeah,
I wouldn't be surprised if Horford takes Porzingis' spot and basically the other version of that rotation, and then you could see Tillman or Brissett fill in for the group that I just named. That would be really interesting to me. Just quickly, I guess it's like a boring last thing to say. Actually, it's a super boring last thing to say, but I think an important one. The finals, the second quarter, Boston won 19-12. The thing that we have said going into this series was don't let Miami slow it down and muck it up, because they're better at it than you are. And I don't think Boston intentionally meant to slow it down, but it was reassuring that in probably like the ugliest, like you would need to go watch like a bunch of kindergartners play basketball to see basketball that was like that ineffective. Save Derek White, who was, you know, really good. It was encouraging that Boston didn't let go of the rope and like still stayed in the driver's seat, even though the quarter was like preposterously bad. And I don't know, I feel like sometimes when the going gets tough, they can like kind of throw up their hands and then other scrappier teams take advantage. And I was happy and impressed that they didn't do that. And I thought they responded to Porzingis' injury quite well. I mean, they really took it to the hole in that third quarter there.
Yeah. Derek White got fouled on about 3 dunk attempts that he made all of, but that's okay. Anyway.
All right. Well, on that note, Derek White, good job out of you. We're very proud of you. Come on the Celtics Lab podcast anytime you like, but I'm sure you know that. This episode of the Celtics Lab podcast is brought to you by Prize Picks, the exclusive fantasy basketball partner of the CLNS Media Network. If you join this pod, check out the How About Them Celtics podcast, the First to the Floor podcast, and the many other New England sports podcasts available on the CLNS Media Network. We will be back sometime soon. I don't know when. So again, like and subscribe. It helps us a lot and helps you never miss an episode. Until then, thanks for listening. Thanks, Alex. Thanks, Justin. And we'll catch you later. Au revoir.
Peace.